Welcome to The Dot Matrix. I'm Justin.
And I'm Sean.
And this is episode 24, as we were just figuring out 2 seconds before we pressed record, I guess.
And I didn't really warn you, did I?
You just sort of started. I'm like, oh, okay.
Sorry.
All you said was, I think I started last time. Click.
And we're on.
But it's been, 2 or 3 weeks since we did it, I guess. At least three, I think this is the third week after.
Last one was April 3rd or something, so that's about right.
Wow, and a lot has happened. You have gone and come back from your Paris adventure, and I think shortly after we recorded this, that following weekend, my girlfriend came back from 27 days away, so that was a huge relief on my part.
Excellent.
And it's been, for the record, a bliss ever since. So everything's great, but we've got lots to talk about, and let's first of all talk about your trip.
Okay, sure.
We have to. I mean,
yeah.
You just showed me, like, before we went to air, before we started recording, I was Sean was showing me some of his videos, and it was quite fascinating. And they have an amazingly fun video compilation they put together on Facebook. I guess I don't know if it's on Facebook.
It's
embedded
on
Facebook.
Okay. Embedded, yeah.
So it's not
on
like a YouTube. Or anything,
you know what?
So.
We'll check that because we should get on YouTube. It's not on YouTube. Okay, Elaine says we had thought about it. So
and that gets it kind of way too public in some ways, I guess. You know,
yeah,
like it's fun. You know, it's for you guys and for your friends, right? So
exactly.
But anyways, it's hilarious and so classy. Like, if everyone could come back and just encapsulate their trip in like a 3 minute clip or 2 minutes and whatever seconds it is, that's what everyone should do. It's brilliant. Brilliant!
It was kind of, like, it was, in a sense, it was kind of an afterthought in the sense that, you know, we had recorded lots of little clips, her on her nice camera. She had a Nikon D90, and I had my Canon point-and-shoot and a Diana camera, which is all film. And so I still have yet to develop those, but we had a lot of stuff going, and I was making little videos, she was making little videos, and, Elaine said it to that Flight of the Conchords, Fou de Fafa, right?
Yeah.
And, so we thought that was, you know, a good thing to use it for, and it really worked out really well. She edited it quite nicely, and it's quite amusing. Like, when I first saw it, I was like, oh my god. And that's good, because some of the videos, like the ones I did, had sound, but hers didn't. So it was kind of a good way, just let the music kind of guide you through. And
right, yeah.
But yeah, it was a lot of fun, and I think the overall highlights.
Yes, please.
I think was Versailles.
Okay.
And there was a couple of dinners that we did. One place called La Cantine du Troquet, which was amazing. And the chef there, I don't remember his name, but he has his own cooking show in France.
Okay.
So there was a big screen, and you could watch the show and other shows while you're actually eating dinner.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny. But the cool thing was he would come out and serve people and clear tables and bring out, you know, some parts of your meals and stuff. So he's very interactive. Like, it was very cool. Like,
right.
It was a small little place.
So he even interacted with you guys, too? Like, did he say anything insightful, or did he find out that you guys were from Canada? And,
oh!
You know, did they have any dialogue, or just sort of bon appétit, or...?
More like just, like, bon appétit, but the fact that he brought a few things out of ours, which I thought was cool. We knew it was him because we found his place in a magazine when we were getting ready to go, and so we found, like, this Paris travel, like, you know, cool places to go, and...
Yep.
cheaper options and stuff. I mean, it wasn't like cheap, but it wasn't like over the top. So it was kind of in the middle. It was really nice. And the other place we went to was Le Restaurant, which was right in Montmartre, right on the street of our apartment. So we didn't have far to go for that. And again, an amazing meal, great desserts, and really, really friendly. I found people in Paris, both of us found really friendly overall. We didn't have any problems with anyone.
Nice.
Yeah, it was really great. And I got to speak French a lot, so.
Nice. Yeah, and I mean, that's what I the times that I've been there, and it's been a while, I found it very friendly, too. Like,
yeah.
As long as you try, like, I think people like that, you know? I mean, And then people are just happy to talk to you or be nice, you know? Like, I think it's just, you know, how you portray yourself is how they want to portray what you'll get back, right? And you guys are generally friendly people, and you kind of know the language, and you're never going to have problems with you if you're, you know, coming up from that context, right? I think it's good.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it worked well for us where, you know, sometimes you just ask questions, whether you're at a restaurant or you're somewhere. And there was a lot of people that came up to me and said in French, like, where are you going? Or in English? Or
nice.
They can tell, you know, we got the map books and
right.
all this stuff. So.
See, and that's a bigger sign, irrespective of who you are and how you are as individual, what you portray. But the fact that you're out there in a city with a map open.
Yeah.
You know, and people stop and ask. That's a sign of pretty good people, you know?
They do. It's good. And I've had that in other places. I didn't expect it in France necessarily. Because sometimes, you know, people kind of keep to themselves, you know.
Well, here they do, absolutely, in Vancouver.
Yeah, for sure.
Yep.
And you just wouldn't think, you know, if someone would go out of their way, you know, like, it's going to be a busy work day, you know. We're there 2 weeks, like, every day, all hours of the day and stuff. So, it was great. And, you know, like, we saw it. As many sites as we set out to see, and then some. So
before you get to the sites,
mm-hmm.
with the restaurants, and the two highlights in your restaurants, I guess you had heard about those restaurants, and then you had sort of planned to go, right?
The first one we found in the magazine, and then the Le Restaurant on our street, we just saw it. And everyone has their menus posted outside.
Right.
So it kind of looked cool.
Okay.
Like it was... different. It wasn't like just a cafe. It was
yeah.
or a brasserie or something. It was like a restaurant, like full sit down, you know.
Right.
Indoors and it looked like a cool vibe. So
cool.
That was just we just found it.
Neat.
Yeah.
So that was gonna be my question. Is like, I mean, I know you guys did a lot of planning and thinking about what you guys wanted to do, and I was gonna ask you. I'll ask you the same question on the other side, but about food, because I knew you guys are very conscious about trying, you know.
Yeah.
Knowing the lay of the land, foodie wise, you know, and restaurant wise, and I was going to ask you whether or not you had experienced any place you just sort of stumbled upon and just were completely blown away. So Le Restaurant was one of those.
Definitely.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, overall the vibe was cool. You know, we were in Montmartre, which is kind of North Paris, and that was where we stayed, and it was more villagey. It was a little more kind of its own thing, like. You know, like, there's when people think of Paris and they see the shots of the city, you know, it's like a Manhattan, you know, people have those classic views of the city in their minds.
Yep.
Montmartre was different. I mean, it was very, like, Amelie, like, that's where that was shot, right? So
right.
It was a little more like that.
And
yeah.
Your place was, I remember you guys were talking about your place being, like, really tiny and really small. How did it feel like when you were there? Did you really get into it? Do you really feel like this was, like, your little place of Paris for a couple of weeks? Or did it feel really small and cramped and you kind of wanted to get out every day?
Kind of a mix of both. We
okay.
felt really comfortable there, but it was always on our minds of how small it was. I mean, it was tiny.
Yeah.
You know, tiny bathroom, tiny shower, tiny, like, it was a kitchenette, but it was like a couple of hot plates and you
right.
know, little tiny fridge and microwave. Like, it was very teeny. But, you know, you just adapt, you get used to it, and, you know, I didn't think about it too much after a while, but, once you know how everything was going to go and was going to work, and but you know, I preferred it because sometimes when you're in a hotel, you're kind of like, okay, you're the tourist, and we felt like tourists obviously being there, but
right.
having our own little place, kind of off the track a bit, was nice.
Changes your mentality a little bit, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I felt.
Now, one of the
sure.
classic shots. And you have many photos on Facebook, both of you, and one of the most classic shots, and this is sort of, you know, or segueing
right.
into talking about Paris and the sights you saw,
right.
was a one shot. Obviously, Elaine took it. She's at whatever level of the Eiffel Tower, she's taking a picture down,
yes.
and there you are on
there
a
I
park
am.
Bench, sitting waiting. I laughed so hard. I'm like, that is so classic.
That's so me. she surprised me with that. Like, because who would think that someone would be able to find you down there, right?
I know.
Well, that's the amazing camera she has, and obviously she knew where I was going to be, so...
First of all, that was pretty funny. First of all, when
the
caption says, you know, there's Sean, or whatever the caption says in the photo, I'm like, well, there's a couple walking by, right?
And I thought, yeah.
This one had sort of brown hair, and the woman had black. I'm like, is that Sean and Elaine? Wait a second, but Elaine's taking the picture.
Who's Sean?
That? Who's there staying? I'm like, oh, no, it's the lonely guy on the bench.
I know, and I was like, you know, just this little person, you know, way down there. But yeah. Yeah, she managed to take quite a few photos from up there, but that was one that she thought she wanted to show, so it's kind of funny. Like, who would have thought she would have got something pretty noticeable? Like, once you figure out it's me, you're like, well, that's him.
Sean,
yeah. I know.
So other highlights,
Well, the Sainte-Chapelle, which I was talking about, which is near Notre-Dame Cathedral, which is also another highlight. The inside of that was great. Like, we saw a string quartet in Sainte-Chapelle, just immaculately decorated. It's so old, and it was just amazing, being like a cool vibe, you know? Yeah, Notre-Dame, and I mean, for obvious reasons, it's just so well-known, and it's so huge and bigger, larger than life. Oh my goodness. There's so many things that we did. Oh, obviously the other highlight for me was visiting Jim Morrison's grave.
Right. Yes.
Which was really cool. And there was so many other people. I mean, Chopin and Oscar Wilde, and I mean, they're all there, and there's a lot of cemeteries all over Paris. And so we went to a few of them. They're quite different than cemeteries here. Like, they're just so, just like over the top in a way, you know, like the big monuments, like each one's like a monument instead of like a little,
right,
little tomb or something. But so that was cool. Just really just the gardens, Luxembourg Gardens.
Yes,
beautiful. You've been
the only garden I remember is that garden.
Yeah. It's like the garden, I think.
And it's so Paris, like, it's so romantic, and, like, I was there, like, what is it, 11 years ago with my father, so I felt like, you know, this is lost on me, you know?
Yeah.
But you can imagine, like, people go and with their, you know, their blondes and their little chouchous and their, you know, enjoying themselves or something in the sun and stuff. But yeah, I remember that one as being rather quintessentially Paris.
It really was, and you know, it was full of tulips, which we took pictures of.
Oh, wow.
That's my favorite flower, so it was great. You know, when you go in April, it's like tulip weather, and so that was great. You know, a lot of the art, for me, it was the art galleries. I mean, Orangerie had all the, some of the water lilies. And
the Orangerie, is that, I've always thought about the Louvre and the Musée d'Orsay,
right.
But I never heard of the Orangerie.
Well, it's actually in the same lot as the Louvre. It's like, it's just like there's the Jardin des Tuileries, which is leads up to like the gardens that lead up to the Louvre.
Okay, yeah.
It's on the other side of those gardens. So it's like Louvre's on one end, Orangerie is, it's really small.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I had no idea.
Yeah. That was fantastic. And
fantastic or fan fucking tastic? I thought you were going to say that.
Well, I was going to say fabulous.
Oh.
Fantabulous. or redonculous or something.
Please don't say that.
But Musée d'Orsay was amazing. Again, like, we went there. That was the first museum we saw.
Okay.
And it was a huge wait, but it moved pretty well. I was pretty impressed. It was pretty efficient there. Like, we didn't really wait much for anything. That and going to Giverny, Monet's house and gardens,
yes,
was a huge highlight. And that was, like, amazing. I love all that stuff. So Elaine took a really amazing amount of pictures there and videos and stuff. So those were kind of like the ones I can think of right now.
Cool.
I mean, I just kept drinking Kia, which is like, it's white wine with cassis.
Oh,
which is just,
yes,
you know, that red.
Yeah, that red.
Yeah. So I kept having that once I figured out what that, like, once I ordered it once, I was like, I'm just going to order this. And I was drinking like the whole trip. So that was really cool.
Nice.
Yeah, that's kind of it in a nutshell, I think. But
now you're back. It was so funny when I was online and you guys were at the airport. And then I'm like, oh, they're both online. And then suddenly Elaine messages me, and then you message me, and I'm like, oh, they're not, like, sitting there on two separate computers, I guess.
No, we can't possibly share one.
No, of course
not. Two separate computers.
Jeez.
Yeah, so that was good. Oh, and the flights were fine,
Yeah, how are you with the flights?
The flights were great. I mean, I took my Ativan, but
yeah,
even
like,
with that,
zoned out.
10 hours on a flight is... That's a long time. That was twice as long as I've ever been on a flight, so... On the way home, I managed to sleep for a good part of it, like at least half of it.
Okay.
Elaine said, so... though that was new for me, sleeping on a plane. Fabulous service, though.
Direct to Paris and back? I can't remember.
We went down to Seattle.
Oh, right, Seattle.
Direct. Air France doesn't come out of Vancouver direct.
Oh, okay.
They just don't fly to Vancouver.
Right.
And that's not a Air France thing, that's a local thing. I heard about that on the news radio.
Oh.
It's just some, for whatever, it's just some weird reason. It's nothing really out of the ordinary, some weird, strange thing. But, to Seattle, and then, so we flew back to Seattle, and then flew back here again. So we're on a little Horizon Airlines plane.
Okay, yes.
And flights, can't complain at all. I was,
good.
Like, went pretty much without a hitch, I would say.
Neat.
Yeah, so it was trip of a lifetime, really. I don't think we're going to do something like that on that scale for quite a long time, I think.
Well, that's neat. I'm glad.
Yeah.
It sounds like you had a great time.
We did.
Awesome.
Yes.
Well, I don't know how else to segue this, but we'll go on to another topic, I guess. And so I want to end... I'm like guiding this session for some reason. I don't know why. Or this episode. We'll end there. And then I'm going to talk... Actually, what I was doing when you were away, and there's a little bit of proof of that, is I went rock climbing for the first time.
I heard.
I have a few photos on Facebook that my girlfriend was nice enough to post for me. And I took some pictures of her rock climbing as well.
Excellent.
Looking extremely sharp and extremely awesome rock climbing.
Great.
But yeah, I went for the very first time, and apparently she said I picked to it really easily.
Yeah.
And I was doing it pretty well. I mean, it's a quite a fascinating thing. Like,
mm-hmm.
there's quite a lot of specific things you have to do. Like, it's a very regimented thing, right?
Yeah.
And so some of that took a while to get used to. But then you just climb.
Yeah,
you just,
order of things, right?
Yeah, or you have to do certain things, or you have to look at certain pegs or certain holdings on the wall that are color-coded a certain way. And if you decide to go up a route that's a certain color, you really have to only use those ones. And,
mm-hmm.
and that's part of the sport of it, right, I guess, is that, you know, you have to assume the other ones aren't there. And how,
oh, okay.
I mean, what's the mentality of getting to that next hold, right? And I didn't quite get that until I was climbing up the first time. I was halfway up, and someone said, "You're on the wrong one. You can't use that one." I'm like, "But it's right there." And it's like, "But it's not." You know, and I'm like, "You're debating the philosophy of this sport while I'm on this wall." And I'm thinking, I have philosophical differences about the fact that I can't put my foot on that thing. Right. And then you. I mean, you get a bit frustrated with that, especially when you can't figure it out, right? When you can't figure out where to go next, right? You just want to just put your foot there, right?
Yeah.
But then, I guess, in the end, you know, like, when you think about it, it defeats the purpose of the sport if you just do whatever, right?
Right.
Like, what's the point, right?
Right.
So, I'm like, okay, I get it.
It's a bit of a learning curve there, I guess.
Yeah, and I didn't fall to the very end in the last one I did. At some point, your arms just hurt like hell, and you just can't hold anymore, and you just...
And
then they brace you, and then you...
The repelling, right?
Yeah, and then you sort of belay yourself down. But yeah, it was kind of neat.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
So you guys are going to go again and do it more? And
yeah, I think so. At least, you know, whenever she wants to go again. And I think, once I just couldn't do it anymore, I was done for the day, right? I think her friend, it was three of us together, and her friend, she went up one more or a couple more.
Mm-hmm.
I think she did one as well, but it's weird because you're supposed to, it's not about pulling yourself out, it's about pushing yourself from your legs up the wall, right?
So your arms are like a guide.
Yeah, your arms are a guide, but at a certain point, something you gotta just pull, right? And so that's why your hands and your arms get really tired, right?
Right,
so,
right.
But yeah, that was fun. I was glad to do it, and happy to report that I did something physical.
That's great, and because I'd only done it once back in grade 6. When we did it at Strathcona Park.
Oh, right when I didn't go.
Yeah, and I haven't done it since, though. I don't think I have. But a couple of guys actually go a couple times a week during lunch at work.
Oh, well, it's just around, there, yeah. Right? That's exactly the same one I went to, Cliffhangers.
Is it? That's near where I work, I guess.
Well, it's closer to the Home Depot, right?
Oh, okay.
Right, so it's
that's
very
fun.
Close,
yeah.
Yeah, it's just like over the
quick
overpass
drive.
Or something, yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, maybe I should go with you guys sometime. I mean,
yeah.
I thought about going with them and stuff. I think that'll be fun. I remember enjoying it way back, but
yeah.
I was a kid. I mean,
because I think you can go anytime to go and do it yourself, but you need someone who is trained to be able to be the belayer or whatever the term is, the person on the ground when you're going up who's supporting you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and like, I mean, I couldn't do that. Emmeline did it for me, and her friend did it for me as well, but I couldn't support them. They had to support each other.
Oh, okay.
Because I need to have one training course on it or something.
Really?
Just, yeah, because it's it
yeah.
is kind of specific, and I
wow.
mean, yeah, and if you don't do it right, I mean, someone could just free fall down, right?
Yeah,
so,
completely.
Yeah.
Oh,
so I get it. Yeah, that's true.
Cool.
But that's number two. I wanted to bring that up, so that was useful.
No, definitely.
The third one is Thanok and ski jumping, and I like you said that was the one thing on your list, and it was
yeah.
on my list for I think a lot of the same reasons that you have it, but also one other reason, which I had a very interesting discussion with my sister on about, like, what I thought about this issue.
Mm-hmm.
But first, I want you to go to town.
Oh, well, you know, I you know, being away when we were, this kind of started when we were away, I think.
Yes, and this issue, the issue's been brewing for a little bit in terms of the women ski jumpers not being able to have their sport
yeah.
in the Winter Olympic Games for 2010, although the men's ski jumping has been in the Games for many years, and they were again denied to be in the Olympic Games this time, so that's the context. But yeah,
and I just read this in a commentary in the Vancouver Sun, I guess,
okay, yep.
Saturday one, and this woman who has, I think she has a column every week, and I always read it because she makes a lot of sense usually. I'm always like, yeah, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, she brought this up, and I thought to myself, I was like, wait a second, are there just no women's... Like, have I never seen women ski jumping? Like, it's just something I just never...
Right.
I'm used to seeing men, like ski jumping on TV, during Olympics. I just didn't... Or the World Championships or something. It didn't
right.
even occur to me that there's no women competition. It's like,
right.
Well, why the hell not, right? Like,
I mean, you can't tell the difference except for maybe that there would be a little bit curvier.
Yeah,
like,
well, that's just
because they're
it.
Wearing goggles and a helmet,
oh, yeah.
like, you know.
Or when you see the names, right? And you're like,
right.
okay, yeah, that's dude from our country. Okay, great.
Right.
But when she's talking about this in this article and the reasons behind it, I started to get really angry because I'm like, essentially, in a nutshell, it sounds like Thanok doesn't want anything to do with upsetting the apple cart because if they do, they risk their... so-called relationship with the IOC going forward after the Olympics.
Well, what does that have to do with anything? You're not going to hold it again in anyone's lifetime.
But we could somewhere else in Canada. And it could affect other cities in Canada, like Toronto
or
whoever.
Quebec City, yeah.
And that's why they don't want to even go near this. And it's just like, but they could use this opportunity to lead, you know?
Yes.
Like, I couldn't believe it. And I'm like... But apparently, though, but there's an ongoing benefit that we're getting, or so there's something to do with Thanok and IOC well beyond the Olympics here, that if they start messing around with this, that or standing up for women's rights or something, you know, can't have that or anything. It's only 2009. That,
right.
That they risk that relationship or something. Like, what is that about? Do you know more about that?
No, see, I don't know too much more about that.
Or you had something different
yeah.
to say about it. Oh, okay.
What I think one is atrocious. Like, well, I mean, well,
it's appalling.
One thing is interesting. Like, I get the understand. I mean, the theory around, you know, well, you can't have the Olympic Games because the sport isn't developed enough and there's not enough countries who are competitive in that sport. You know, to a degree, I could take that argument. But then if you
mm-hmm.
don't put in the Olympic Games, there's no carrot for people
yes.
to be enticed to actually train and go for it, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, which one is it? Like, do you wait for the sport to be developed in order to make it an Olympic sport, or do you use the Olympics to help it develop?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the same reason why I think women's softball is not going to be in the Olympics anymore because they're saying only Australia and the United States are competitive in it. And there's a risk that women's hockey will be eliminated from the Olympic Games because only Canada and U.S. ever...
Like ice hockey?
Ice hockey.
Only, you're kidding. Because they rocked. We rocked.
We do,
before.
Yes. But some people say that one of the reasons why it's not talked about as much is because Sweden ended up winning silver last time as they beat the Americans. So having at least a third country in there kind of thing has been useful.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, like, I mean, whether or not you agree with that argument is one thing, right?
Okay.
That I wasn't aware of.
Okay.
So that wasn't really the point I was going to bring up. I mean, other than the fact that I think it's completely wrong. I mean, I think, you know, like, and I, you know, what you're saying about IOC and Van Ock and Canadian Olympic Committee and, you know, not trying to rock the apple cart. I mean, that's happened all over the place for all sorts
of
different things. You know, it's completely...
That wasn't really a surprise to me.
Yeah,
but...
and that's to me is the one, other than the human rights issues, is completely appalling and what has made me continually be disappointed over and over again where... I continually have to say, yes, Sean, you're right, about sort of the whole, like, why is Vancouver hosting the Olympic Games, and are you for it or against it, like, you know, like...
Oh,
I'm,
yeah, going back to that.
You know,
yeah.
Like, yeah, I mean, I had a huge argument with my sister, but we were in discussion about the Olympic Games and volunteering, and that's a whole other topic about how it was on the radio again this morning about how they're not helping any volunteers find accommodations that are affordable, and
awesome.
they won't accept any volunteers unless they hit themselves and found accommodations, and I'm like, we're gonna spend a whole topic about this, but I really should be careful with what I say, but what I thought was interesting about this topic, irrespective of all those things that I find really appalling about this whole Olympic movement,
mm-hmm.
is what I found really fascinating about this particular topic, which is why it's in the media again and has been in the last couple of weeks, is that I guess there's some, I don't know if it's women ski jumpers or what have you, who's exactly putting it out, but they are in the court system right now, suing.
That's
right.
Right?
And that's why it's in.
That's why the article was there, yeah.
Because they're saying that women ski jumping should be in the Olympics because it's a violation of the Charters of Rights and Freedoms, which is a Canadian charter.
Yes.
And it governs any, you know, I guess government agency or whatever, among other things, in Canada, and they said that by Van Ock disallowing women ski jumping in the games, it's contravening the charter of human rights of rights and freedoms, and that's illegal, and so they have to legally put them in because Van Ock is a government agency. And so there's something about something about government agency, right?
Right.
And
right.
So what I found really interesting about this is if you think about it in legal terms, so putting your law and order hat on, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, is Van Ock a government agency? You know? And it depends on how you argue it, right? And I would find, and I don't know, and I haven't read the articles about it since. I don't know what the ruling has been, or if it's, I think it's still, I don't know if they've ruled yet.
I don't think so.
But to hear the arguments of both sides, I'm assuming Van Ock is arguing that they're not a government agency, but they are IOC, right? They're Olympic Committee, so it's international, it's not Canadian. While I'm sure in the other end, I mean, how do you prove that they're a government agency? And I thought, well, that's interesting. Like, what are the arguments? So the argument on if you're Van Ock would be,
mm-hmm.
well, we're governed by the IOC. We never in our literature say we're a government of Canada thing, right? Or a government of British Columbia thing, right?
Mm.
And each of the sports are governed by their international federations, not by the IOC, right? But Van Ock is in itself an event, right?
Yeah.
So there's arguments in that sense, right? I guess about that, you know. Because they say all the time, oh, well, it's not our problem, it's the IOC, you know, it's the IOC,
sure.
It's the IOC, it's lots of their excuses. And on the other end, I was thinking about that, I'm like, well, okay, then they're not government, they've never really portrayed themselves as government. And then I thought about the other end, it's actually a more compelling argument, after I thought about it longer, is that, well, okay, just because you say you're not government doesn't mean you're not government.
Effectively.
I don't know how much of the money is coming in to run to run VanOck and to run VanOck's operations, but from what we've heard from people and from various different sources, VanOck or the IOC is putting very little money into it. I mean, it's some corporate sponsorships, yes, but the bulk is coming from the federal government, the provincial government, building all the venues and the municipalities and all that sort of stuff, right? VanOck is a stingy corporate beast which pays for nothing, right? So if you're funded mainly by government, then are you not a government entity?
Exactly. It's all about where the money comes from. They're just money launderers.
Oh, jeez.
But no, that's what's going to come down to. I mean, I'm sure there's some technical literature on what makes a government agency. And then there's the, like, I don't know, is this a jury or is this a judge or is this like a...
I'm not quite sure.
Because I think it would go down to almost an opinion, like a legal opinion.
It would have to be a legal opinion. I think from probably just a judge, I would think.
Yeah.
Because a jury can't give a legal opinion on that sort of stuff, right? I mean...
Yeah. Because, well, I just think, you know, if it's a judge and he's just going to sit there and weigh it, he could say in the interest of human rights or the interest of, you know, the charter or whatever, that who cares if they think they're a government agency or not? They're acting as one or something.
Right. Well, and the legal term is agent, in effect, agency. That's the term.
Right.
And I've been doing some of my work, been doing or being involved with some research, legal research around this issue, and mainly around government funding to nonprofit organizations. And actually, in the sense, if a government may actually fund an organization at 100%, 100% of a nonprofit organization could come from government, but are they in fact an agent of government? And actually, in most of the research, it's kind of not clear. And actually, you would say not. Because if it was an agent of government, then all those employees would be government employees. They would have, you know, justin@gov.bc.ca as my email address if I was working at that. You know, that would mean I'm government, right? So there's a lot of those things, which is actually more sides with VanOck than the ski jumpers in this case. So now I'm getting confused again now that I'm thinking about this. So it's a...
I think VanOck's going to get out of this one, I think.
Oh, I think the legal arguments are not... Or the legal foundation and legal research and the legal precedence is not clear. And I don't think any judge would be too...
Would
put their neck out.
It seems to be a bit... Well, I don't know. You said that this has been going on for a while, but it just seems like it's coming to the forefront a bit late.
That's true. The timing is a bit off.
I think maybe figure this out for, what is it, 2014 for Russia or whatever? Russia.
I'm sure the Russian human rights courts are equally up to the task.
Yeah. I don't know.
But
I think we should have heard about this in 2003.
Yeah, and I think they tried in some respects, but this is the one channel where it has to go through legal. Because once you put up a legal challenge, I think it has to go through the process, right? So, but you're right. I mean, even if the judge says, yes, you should do it, like, isn't the whole schedule already organized? The tickets already on sale, right? So how do you
throw that in there?
Yeah.
Maybe they're just doing it to make a point.
And hey, that's fair enough, too. Right?
And which is great, yeah. And then that way it has to go for, you know, maybe... Because really, it means bringing the IOC into this, right? Which is a huge monster, right? Like, a monster organization. Like, how... It looks like a long battle to me. I think more power to them, and I think it's great. And I just think it's just sad that VanOck immediately are just like, no, you know. Every time I hear the word VanOck, I get this feeling that I don't like, you know. And it's there's no reflection on the people who work there. It's a reflection on the culture, or Furlonger,
right?
You know, the guy who's running the show, you know, who makes these decisions, whoever that is. I just think it's ridiculous.
I was
shocked,
and actually, I don't think the people making the decisions have really much decision making power, like at the VanOck level.
I think it's
the IOC basically says it's this, and this.
Yeah,
and if you want that, well, sorry, it's not going to happen.
That's
not to say
true.
That people and Vanok at the highest levels don't have some responsibility for the fiasco in which it is becoming. They have a lot of responsibility on that, right? But,
yeah.
But it's hard to lay sole singular blame when a behemoth of an international organization who really, in many ways, although they pay good lip service to it,
yeah.
does not understand communities and not understand how you should be able to leverage something to benefit a lot more people than you're doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
Anyways.
What do you got next on there?
Well, the only last thing is my sad note about Bea Arthur.
Yes, we talked about how we're going to talk about this.
Yes, and I thought we could we could end with that because
yeah.
it is 35 minutes already, and it's very interesting. You actually was the one who broke the news because I didn't hear about it at all, and then I got home, and then Vanessa was like, "I've got sad news." I'm like, "I know."
Yeah,
and so I read a lot about her. I don't know if you had a chance to,
mm-hmm.
to look a bit. I went to like one of the entertainment websites I go to is Jam, which is a subsite of Canoe.ca,
right.
And they had a little article, and they used the most atrocious old recent photo of an old Bea Arthur who looked like she was melting. Like, it looked awful. Like, really,
oh,
is that the
no.
picture you want to use? But New York Times did a really nice long. Article about her life and her career, which I thought was really fascinating.
We should post that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because,
well, I don't know, I it just made me think again, like, you know, what an impact she had. All in the Family, Maude, Golden Girls, obviously.
Yep.
People don't think about it, they think, oh, it's just a bunch of old ladies, right? But the kind of stuff they were saying in the script, you know, they were saying in these episodes was so ahead of its time. Like, people just don't, like, realize, like, everything from drugs to, like women's things, like abortion and feminist issues, you know.
Right. Well, what I find really fascinating about, and she was a nice and a powerful driver on this, is when you think about social issues in entertainment context, it helps. Like, at the time, you know, watching Maude, for those in the population who were of age and adults and struggling with those very issues, it was a reflection of what they were talking about, what they're debating in their households, in their churches, in their workplaces, and whatever. Same thing with Golden Girls, to some respect, although I don't think they really tackled something like abortion in a time when it was the most contentious issue. Like, that abortion episode came out a few months before Roe v. Wade, so that hadn't even been decided yet.
Which
is, you know, quite fascinating.
Yeah.
So I don't think the Golden Girls time really had something like that, where they really had to had an ability to comment on something that was out of the moment.
Yeah.
But what it really did is made normal those topics, or those discussions of those topics, which I find really fascinating. Like, and I think, you know, that you and I growing up, especially, like, like, I think if you were growing up in the time of Maude, and you're maybe 10, 12, 14,
mm.
or, you know, like, you know, of okay. age where you can actually watch it and understand the joke and the humor, but not necessarily understand the whole political and social and moral debate about some of these
mm-hmm.
really pressing issues. But then you look at it as entertainment, well, it's on TV, and you're, you know, hey, you know,
I
get a sense of it.
It gets people talking about those
yeah.
things.
Yeah, and then it becomes sort of like, okay, yeah, and then you grow up. I mean, understanding there's conflict and there's disagreement in it, but you understand it as being a normal part of what the dialogue is in community and families and whatever. And I think the same thing with Golden Girls. I think, I always credit the humor, like some of my humor, what I find funny or when I say certain things as a Dorothy, you know, humor kind of thing, right? Which is totally Bea Arthur.
Yeah,
but it
sure.
really, yeah. But it totally, like, I mean, they talk about things like, you know, racism. Lebanese or lesbians or whatever.
That's,
you know,
the big one, yeah.
Like, you forget that we talk about those things and the issues that with Golden Girls, like, it was just normal stuff.
Yeah,
and it's because you have it made normal through entertainment. I think it's a very powerful thing, and I think
yeah.
people would probably, who don't agree with those views, probably look at those those shows are what I'm saying is that's why it's dangerous. That's why entertainment is dangerous. But I don't know. I don't have those views, so I think it's been totally...
I certainly don't. And I agree. It's like, even though, you know, things that they would maybe talk about in Girl and Girls were already... They already kind of broke through with those things the decade before with Maude.
Right.
But now it's almost like she was even more of a senior during right. Golden Girls. I mean, she was already a senior with Golden Girls, right?
Yep.
And so what I like is how they raise issues about what seniors go through.
Yes.
And that was hilarious to us, you know, because
yeah.
we would, what would we do? We'd think of our grandmothers or whatever. You know what I
right.
mean?
Right, yes.
It's, you know, a lot of people are turned off by, you know, it's like, well, why would I watch four old ladies, you know? And,
right.
so, and I can totally see that, because I think, you know, if a sitcom came out today about that, I probably wouldn't even
right.
think about it, really. But back then, it was just, it was more about the actual comedic sensibilities or whatever, like the
right.
timing, the comedic timing, and
yeah.
the talents of all those four women really came out. And, so that's, you know, and B. Arthur was the queen of timing, which was great, you
yes.
know, and I'm glad that, you know, people are in those articles, like the one you read, I've read a couple of Globe and Mail or whatever, and people are coming out and talking about that, and it's like, yeah, she was hilarious, you know?
Yes.
So.
Yeah. And I think a lot of empathy gets out of that when you think about, like, us as kids, just barely out of our, you know, into double digits, really,
yeah.
you know, watching this show and seeing about seniors and I mean, not necessarily being able to step into their shoes, but just get a sense of what their life is like. And I mean, you had all these storylines about, you know, people going through blindness and coping with that or dementia or old age and various different things. And, you know, I think I probably developed a lot of empathy more than I would have if I wasn't watching that show, you know?
Totally.
So.
Because, you know, people always think nowadays that kids have no idea, they don't think about their elders, you know? Like, especially in Western society, put it that
right.
way. And I think that's a good point. I think, you know, because of shows like that, people start to, and yeah, it was really groundbreaking for its time. And I know she did some stuff after, and more Broadway, and more this, more that, but... yeah, it sounds like she had a long, full life, so.
Right.
Which is great.
Yeah.
So, yeah, two left.
Two yeah. left.
So, yeah, well, that wraps up that one. Another Golden Girl passed. And, yeah, we will do this again probably in 2-3 weeks.
As tends to be our schedule. But I'm glad you're back, I have to say. It's
oh,
been,
thanks.
We've all missed you in
oh,
Elaine.
We'll miss you guys too.
We can't wait to get all together and to talk about it all and hear all the stories again, you know.
Absolutely. I feel a dinner coming on.
Yes. Well, I was talking to a certain someone who was supposed to send an email out, and
oh.
I haven't heard, so.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll just give a little nudge on that.
Yeah.
A little reminder.
Yeah. Oh. Sorry. Those.
Are you okay there, Jeff?
Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, thanks for listening, everyone. And that was episode 24. And, ooh, 24. Great show. I got to watch that tonight.
Ooh, that's a good reminder for you. Almost 25 coming up next. So
yes.
I was going to say quarter century, but that doesn't make any sense. So anyway, yeah, so you can catch us at thedotmatrix.com.
Right.
Or you can subscribe on iTunes. And we have a Facebook group as well, so you can reach us in all those places. And yeah, enjoy the show.
Yeah, until next time.
Hey, see ya.